Okay, thanks. So, this is a tough time of year for me. Less sun really affects me, and the cold coming. And today is, 32 degrees. So for here, it's pretty cold. For my bones, it's very cold. But it's also the time of year where I had my birthday, end of October. My son's birthday was last Saturday. And those are nice moments, but there's also a lot of grief around them, actually, to be honest. And just the fall, things are dying. It's a really tough, very alive kind of time of year. I say alive because I was going to start by the toughest question I find somebody can ask me is, how are you? Because to be honest, unfortunately, people don't want you to be honest or expect you to be honest. So I could just lie and say, oh, I'm fine or whatever, or I'm alive or whatever. But really, the answer would be, I'm alive. It's like the koan, what is meditation? Not meditation. What is it? It's alive. That's what comes to me a lot of the time when somebody really asks, like, how are you? Well, I'm alive, because that's all I can really answer honestly. And I think that's kind of what practice has done for me, because I know it's a Zen Threads talk and I want to connect with practice, which is such a big part of my life and really, really, really meaningful to me. Practice has been really meaningful and important in my life, in that before practice, I really didn't feel alive and I was scared to feel. I was truly, truly scared to feel. And I tried not to feel. I literally was trying to be a rock. I mean, that's how I saw myself, as a rock or stone, something unfeeling, and that would be safe, because I didn't feel safe. And, that's why there's a koan, a stone drenched in rain. Well, for me, I love that koan because it feels like my experience from practice or what practice has sort of helped me with. The way I see it, the stone drenched in rain, the rain gets into the stone and softens it. And that's kind of, then it guides you, I guess. The points the way part for me is where feeling and experiencing and kind of feeling my way through lets me know where to go. And that feels like what life really is, if I'm honest. Because so much of the time, there's so many things going on. I'm sure for everyone, there are so many things going on. I know for me, I really feel overwhelmed a lot. And like I don't know what to do, or the thought, I can't do this, comes up a lot. Like, I just can't go on. I can't do this. I can't breathe, all these things. And then I think what practice has given me is the ability to kind of, well, feel my way through and to kind of just keep showing up, kind of moment after moment after moment. I was thinking to myself as we were sitting meditating, I wrote it down. But it's like, let me see. Sometimes I feel so scared of like the future and what it's going to bring or what's going to be. And it's too much to really stay with that, the thinking of the future. And it kind of forces me back into the present and lets me be where I am. And that's really how I think I've kind of learned to live through practice, is to keep coming back to what's actually happening. Not what I think is going to happen or what happened or what's going on in my mind, where I can make up all these stories of what's going on. And when I really look at them, most of them, if any, I mean, none of them are really true. At least to some degree, they're just fabrications. They're novels, sort of, or narrative, whatever. That's what I think I'm really grateful about practice, is that it's taught me that I can just keep coming back because, and that I don't need to know what's what or what's going to be or what's going on, because I think I grew up thinking I had to know, I had to have certainty to be safe. And that didn't work because there was no certainty. So I was in sort of a state of fighting all the time, internally at least, fighting the world, resisting life. And that wasn't working. By the time I was, I guess, 30, it just wasn't working. And then when my son was born, and he was born extremely premature and very, very sick, and it was just like, it just hit me. And it really, that's when I took up formal practice, within maybe a month of my son's birth in 1996. I had always dabbled, but I never had a teacher. And I actually went to a traditional Chan practice, or it was my first practice, formal practice, and with a very well-known teacher, Sheng Yin. And I remember I used to bring my son, who was on oxygen, and he used to hold him when he gave talks sometimes. It was really sweet. But he would tell me, because I was really fearful and a mess back then, he would tell me, you know, your family is your practice. Your life is your practice. And I didn't like that at first. I didn't want to feel all that I was feeling and be responsible. I kind of wanted to run away. I mean, it was a fantasy, but I really wanted to be a monk, you know, because I thought, well, then I'd have nothing to worry about. But, I mean, you know, that was, you know, my thinking. It was just an escape, but that's really for a little time. But he pretty quickly dispelled all that, you know, and really gave me good direction, and you focus on your family and your life, and that's where your practice is. And I think that was a great way to get started. And I was very fortunate, because as much as I didn't want to hear that, it was the thing I most needed to hear. And you know, he pushed me right back into what was actually happening. And now I just am very grateful, you know. But I don't think it's useful to get into all the things that are going on, but there's a ton of things going on in my life right now. But I don't think that's so exceptional. I think the key is, how do I live, and how do I deal with these things, and how do I show up? And for me, I guess practice, whatever we call practice and life, seem to be one at this point, pretty much. They don't really feel so separate anymore, you know, and I'm grateful for that, because, well, whatever. I mean, just because this is how I live, literally, this is how I live. I mean, truthfully, I'm just lucky for that. And you know, I don't want to spend too much time talking about me or what's going on. I think that's probably enough, just how practice and life are so integrated, and it's all together, and the joy and the grief and the fear and the love and the excitement. It's life is all of this. And that's something that, why I say life for me is very rich at this point. I don't have much in terms of money, but I do feel like I'm very rich, because I have so much that's going on, and so many connections and people and feelings, you know. And, you know, and that's really kind of cool, as much as it can be really uncomfortable and really scary at times to really feel some of the things we feel. It's really nice to truly be alive. And I think that's a good way to end. And thanks. And I love to always hear what people have to say about what's going on with them. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, John.
Go.
Just briefly, what I'm just so struck with that last, one of the last things you said there about being rich with feelings. I'm like, yes, it's not something I think about, that all of those feelings are wealth, are the wealth of now. And that's so gorgeous. Thank you.
Thank you so much, John. And Sarah, even what you just said just kind of filled me up too. You know, John, I think I said this to you, I always look forward to everything that you have to say, and it always gives me a lot to think about. And it struck me today that you are vulnerable, and you do share such personal things with us. And as personal as they are, I always feel so connected and like, how is he voicing these things that are in my heart or in my head? You know, just in that our human experience. And I'm always grateful for that, because I think I find myself just going, you state things so beautifully and just truthfully. And I just thank you from every part of my being today for that. And I really appreciate that. And I loved your, the observation or whatever you've shared about the stone drenched with rain. I'm going to meditate on that.
Yeah, thank you, John. Same as what Susan was saying. I feel a lot of connection with a lot of what you were saying, and it's, you know, it feels good to hear someone else say it, verbalize it for you, and it makes, you know, like when I'm struggling with the time of accepting the feelings in the situations. It's so far for me at times, you know, it's like, I'm not appreciating the richness of it a lot of the time. I'm fighting with it. But yeah, and I could relate to the stories, you know, like the futurizing and how, you know, how unhelpful that is, and how the best thing I can do when that's happening is to come right back to where I'm at right now, you know, to, you know, like sensing, you know, that right now I'm okay. You know, right now it's not a catastrophe. I can feel the chair underneath me and, you know, the heat coming from the vent now and, you know, things like that. I think I grew up in a similar way where I felt like I had to know everything to be safe. So when you said that, I'm like, yeah. And so this, you know, the stories, I just feel like they've been a part of trying to get some certainty, you know, by making them up. And I don't know, my brain needed to do something to make it feel okay, whatever was happening. But how, you know, just what you're saying, it just reminds me of how precious it is to be in the present moment, feeling what's really happening instead of, you know, all the stories about it. And I remember when I was having a procedure a couple years ago where I had to be awake and they were going to take a biopsy of my thyroid, and I was really nervous, but I just kept telling myself, okay, I feel the needle, you know, okay, I can do this, you know, I can do that, you know, instead of going further than, you know, what was happening. Okay, that's uncomfortable. I feel that. Okay, you know, I'm here, you know, just being here was okay. it was like one little bit at a time was tolerable and okay. So I really appreciate, you know, what you're saying. And it brought me into the more well, the reality, I guess. Yeah, and I really do, you know, thank you, Sarah, for saying that feelings are the wealth of now. You know, that does feel really good and true for me. Mm. So, yeah, thank you.
That was what John said. Anyway, yeah, but I, you know, this ties together with something, oddly enough, something that came up for me during the meditation was about, you know, we're coming up towards Bodhi Day and thinking about the story and about the name that Siddhartha gave his son, Rahula, fetter, tether, in a way. And I always thought of that as something like, ooh, you know, how could he name his son that? You know, what's this? You know, rejection of the household. And then I realized, no, actually, without that fetter, he could have gone nowhere. Knowing that he had a son, you know darn well he never forgot he had a son. Even being a, you know, an ascetic monk in the forest, that tether might have been the only thing that kept him alive inside and able to come back and be in the world, to be, to bring anything to anybody. And it resonated. And then I heard you talking about that time when your son was an infant, so much at risk, and how much that felt like a fetter. And then how much Shengyen kept saying, that's it, that's your practice. You know, I thought, well, the Buddha wouldn't have been a Buddha without that fetter, without that son that was somewhere.
Thank you, John. Okay, so if feelings are wealth, I'm like, I'm really wealthy, right? The first thing I want to say is that I'm always so touched by the deepness of your practice and how it lives in your life. I feel it. It's very touching to me. There's other things going on now. I'm not just, but, and which I will share in a second, but, you always bring me back. When I'm struggling, oh, geez, okay, no apologies, crying but Shimani Christmas, crying man is back. Boy, he's been gone for a while. You always bring me back to the practice when I'm struggling with the practice. Every time I hear you talk, it's like, oh my God, how can I struggle with something that is so deep and so true? And I feel it so through you. So, and then today, what you said, you know, how are you? I'm alive. You know, that just, and the stone drenched with rain. All of those things are also lying with what is the sound of one hand right now. I'm really grieving for Zena's dad died of a heart attack two days ago. This is him.
Oh, thank you.
That's Bob. Amazing human being.
Wow.
Zena, amazing human being. He lives in her. This was very unexpected. He was an ultra marathoner and a vegan and a defender of prairie dogs, belonged to PETA. He was a vegan ultra marathoner. I mean, just try to wrap your head around that. And he was still running, and he was a professional motocross racer who then became a mechanic. He finally closed his shop like 2 years ago at 80 and retired, very hard on him. But until, I think probably his last ultra marathon was probably as recent as 3 years ago. And he used to, you know, part of my practice has always been what would Bob do? Because it was always about, I'd go, you know, when I'm like suffering, and he'd always go, Kelly, it's only pain. and he would always work through it. And he just had a very deep connection to life, although he was kind of protected in his feelings. But we knew that his feelings were very deep. And so he was the healthiest 82-year-old possible, and his heart gave out, he is on our altar. Zena, you know, I want you all to keep Zena in your hearts. She's in grieving. And I also wanted to share that Van's father, whose name is also Bob, is also on our altar. He's 102 and he's failing. He's in hospice, and Van is not here because he went to be with him. So, but the whole thing about I'm alive, you know, I'm so grateful, and also that I'm alive and that he lives. All of those experiences live within me and within those of us who've known him. And the sound of one hand is partly the loss of the other hand, or the shadow hand that I always will feel. So thank you.
Kel, would you send me that picture in whatever way you can, because it'll be also on my altar. I had news yesterday of one more death this week, just a week ago. A dear friend of our Sangha, a member of our Sangha, who then moved to California but stayed in touch, Bill Brown, fell and died last Saturday. I got a call from Tenzin, and he was 75, 1 year older than me. And so there is, you know, in this season for us, this presence of death, and also the stone drenched with rain, right? Yeah. And the love that we feel is our aliveness, isn't it?
Oh, John, I think I said it last time. Just love to go have a cup of coffee. It's, you know, would be a, I think that would just be a great afternoon or evening or whatever. Yeah, and it's like what's been said by so many others. It's like, how does this guy wander around in my head and then come back and talk about it so well? You know, because just this morning I was, I don't even want to go into it, but just struggling with some of the, and you just articulated it so well, and I just had to chuckle. Especially those, you know, imaginative fears and stuff and living in, just great. Wonderful things. And I really like, it's a perfect talk to go into Thanksgiving week. And thank you for the feelings as well. And the discussion around that, because it's like, sometimes it's not easy to be grateful for all the feelings and to think of them as something to hold dearly, you know, although, yes, and so thank you for sharing it and putting it in that perspective and for everything and bringing up, you know, the other sense and the loss and how it all lives together. I also chuckled at your 32 degrees because I'm sitting here, it's 35 degrees, it's a little chilly out here, and I'm stumbling around trying to stay warm. I got to work on this. You know, I like sitting out here because I get to hear the hummingbirds are still here and the ravens and all these things, and I get to listen to that as opposed to people snoring and the heater going off, and we have to keep the house really warm for Faye, and it's, I don't like really hot houses, and so I've got to figure out, okay, at what point do I go, okay, I can't sit out here anymore, but it's so far trying to keep it all wrapped up, and then I stumble over things, so yeah, whatever. But we'll go ahead and do vows, and then as always, it's Saturday morning. We can hang or not hang as we can.
Rick, could we stretch it just a little bit? So if Nate wants to speak, he can still speak while we're all here. Not to put you on the spot, Nate.
That's all good.
There you are.
I need that. I was going to say thank you, John, so much for everything you shared and just everyone for the wealth of emotion that was in this talk. I really appreciate it. Definitely resonate a lot with pretty much a lot that was said. I honestly don't have much to say, but thank you everyone.
And thanks, Nate. Yes. Oh, and thanks all. Again, it's like somebody always says, I mean, being here in the Saturday mornings and surrounded by you folks is really, for me, it's my connection away from just myself, and it's really nice. So thank you all for being here. The four boundless vows. I vow to wake the beings of the world. I vow to set endless heartache to rest. I vow to walk through every wisdom gate. I vow to live the great Buddha way. I vow to wake the beings of the world. I vow to set endless heartache to rest. I vow to walk through every wisdom gate. I vow to live the great Buddha way. I vow to wake the beings of the world. I vow to set endless heartache to rest. I vow to walk through every wisdom gate. I vow to live the great Buddha. thank you all again so very much. It's always nice. It's good to be here. It's good to see everyone. Yeah, I'll keep you guys, and Zena and everyone, in thoughts and heart as we go through the holidays. And you will all be in my hearts in the holiday season, because it is a struggle for lots of people in lots of ways, and there is that whole thing. I think one of the things I heard this morning, and I hear it over and over, we all seem to have a lot of the same kind of thinking, so maybe that's what draws it together. I don't know. Maybe that works. But this idea that practice and life are so intertwined, you know, I've really come to appreciate that more and more here. You know, and Sarah has helped me a lot. See, when you said the teaching that your family is your practice, you know, I too would much rather be sitting in some cabin in the woods away from everyone else and just talking long distance. But then I realized, you know, is that just another storyline I keep telling myself? And the reality is, where I'm at is where I'm at. And it is where my practice and my life are. And it's actually pretty good when you get right down to it. And I'm very grateful. And one of the things I'm most grateful for is this, and for all of you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Have a good rest of the week and happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks, Sarah. Thanks so much, John.
Thank you, John.
We have to do that coffee sometime.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know. We'll see.
We'll figure it out. Thank you for everyone.
Thanks, thank you. John. Have a beautiful day.
You guys too. Take care.